So I think I will go ahead now and get started with our talk for the day. So we'll have plenty of time for our discussion and everything. So as many of you know, this year here at Sims, we're doing a series on the paramis, the 10 beautiful qualities of mind or 10 perfections that we cultivate to help us live well in this world and to be open to awakening and enlightenment. And our topic this month is sila, or ethical conduct. So last week, Suze gave us a wonderful introduction to this parami. And so this week, I'm going to be continuing with that theme with more of an emphasis on how I'm working with sila myself this month. And I'm hoping that will give you some ideas for your own practice and your own process, and also encourage you to share with the rest of us what's working for you as we cultivate this parami of ethical conduct. So for sila, I've been taking the same approach this month as I used with generosity last month, and following the guidance of Ajahn Suchito, which is in his book, where he suggests that we should start out by thinking about, reading about, and reflecting on the parami and developing our attention to practice it, and then actually put it into practice. You know, maybe choosing some specific aspects to focus on, activities to do. And then reflect on our experience. You know, noticing where the challenges were, but also noticing if there might be some times when that parami starts to just come naturally and just arise without having to worry about trying to do anything. So in this first phase of reading and thinking and studying and reflecting, once again, I was really taken by what Norman Fisher had to say in his book about how sila should be a source of joy. And I'll repeat some of his words that Sue shared with you too last week. He says, at first sila involves some intentional restraint, but as we continue on the path, we easily and spontaneously practice it without noticing. At this point, the perfection of ethical conduct isn't upright, uptight, or restrictive. It's a joyful path of doing what comes naturally out of the fullness of the heart. I mean, that's so beautiful. And both Suze and Carrie, in their talks last Sunday and on Monday, emphasized this idea that the practice of sila really comes out of this fullness of the heart and a sense of caring and kindness. And hearing this from Norman Fisher, hearing this from them too, really made me recognize even more how important it is to recognize this, how sila comes from this sense of caring. Then Norman Fisher goes on to say more about our attitude toward sila, saying, we don't generally think of ethical conduct in that way. That is, you know, as a joyful path of doing what comes naturally from the fullness of the heart. We think of it quite soberly as a matter of restraint, purification, and righteousness. You follow ethical guidelines to clean up your act, to straighten out your behavior, to be a decent and good person. And he acknowledges that, you know, yeah, those things can be a part of developing sila. And yet, he says, the perfection of ethical conduct, like an eagle in flight, soars far beyond conventional ethics into the empty blue skies of love and delight. Wow. Now, this statement really got me thinking, because I know that I don't generally think about sila as love and delight. You know, just as Norman Fisher says, I'm usually thinking about it more as a matter of restraint and purification and cleaning up my act and straightening out my behavior. You know, definitely more sober and serious, not so joyful. And I also notice that he mentions that the effort to be morally correct is often associated with righteousness and judgment. You know, we can be quite critical, not only of our own conduct, but of other people's conduct too. And more than that, it's easy to take this kind of tendency towards judgment from the kind of wise discernment that helps us to see whether something is skillful or unskillful, which actually is, you know, that's really helpful and something we need to do, to judging the person who's doing these actions too and deciding, I'm a bad person or they're a bad person. And that really isn't very helpful. And then something that makes things even more difficult, at least for me, it's really easy for me and maybe for you too to tend to think about the precepts and other aspects of ethical conduct as if they were a kind of like 10 commandments or something like that, rules that I must obey or I'll be punished or marked as a bad and a sinful person. And on one level, I know that those aren't really the attitudes that are generally encouraged in the Buddha's teachings, but that doesn't keep them from sometimes creeping in, you know. They still creep in. And so for me, it's really a big thing to consciously shift my focus and think of ethical conduct as a source of joy and as a behavior that rises out of love. And, you know, really, we don't always do this, but when you think about it, it just makes sense. You know, you treat yourselves and others well and avoid harming ourselves and others because you care about them. And that goes deeper than any rules ever could, this sense of caring. So that was really an important reflection for me. And something else that really interested me as I did my research on Sila was that in their books, both Norman Fisher and Sylvia Boorstein presented the three refuges along with the Parami of Sila. And a lot of times they go together in the sense that, you know, we take the refuges and the precepts. But here the emphasis seemed a little bit different and maybe more moving for me, really, because it was more on the sense that the three refuges are a support and a foundation for our ethical conduct. So in other words, when we resolve to behave ethically, we're not alone in doing this. We can go for support to the Buddha, to the example of his life, and maybe also to our faith in the Buddha nature in all of us. We can go for support to the Dharma, to the teachings on ethical conduct. And we can go for support to the Sangha, just as we're doing here today, you know, sharing our experiences and our struggles and offering each other encouragement as we try to learn how to behave in a way that benefits all beings. And it seems to me that it's really good to remember when we're struggling with some persistent or troublesome behavior that we really do have somewhere to turn for help and support, and that we're together, doing this together. In his book, Norman also presents the three pure precepts, which are included in the Zen teachings. I vow to refrain from harmful conduct. I vow to cultivate beneficial conduct, and I vow to benefit all beings. And I really like these because they're very simple and they really give the big picture of what we're doing. And they put this whole effort of practicing Sila into the context of wise intention to refrain from harm and to act from kindness. And it's kind of nice to have this big picture to remind ourselves of as we cultivate this parami. So as Norman Fisher says, as we do this effort, we restrain our harmful impulses, we cultivate positive inner qualities and matching outer conduct. And as we continue to do this, this evolves into the pure joy of benefiting others. So we find ourselves loving and helping without a sense of restraint or need to develop virtue. And I mean, that's really wonderful, that sense of being able to love and help without a sense of needing to develop virtue. And Suze mentioned last week, we benefit ourselves too when we do this, because when we behave in this way, we have peace of mind and we're free from suffering from the results of our unskillful actions. So it's just a really beautiful perspective on sila, you know, to think first of all and above all of it as an act of caring and an act of love. So now from reflecting and thinking about how to frame the practice of sila, we come to actions. And it's nice to have this big framework, but it's nice to also have some specifics to reflect on. As Suze talked about last week, we have a really good idea of basic guidance on specific aspects of ethical conduct in the precepts and the teachings on sila in the Eightfold Path. And so we have a summary of these. I'm going to share my screen. Hopefully this will work, so we can look at them together. Share screen. Okay. Can everybody see these? Is this working? Good, great. So we have our basics of ethical conduct, wise action, or the precepts. And this is the version that Sylvia Borstein has in her book, which I really like and which Sue shared last week. Do no harm to anyone. Take nothing that is not freely given. Speak truthfully and helpfully. Use my sexual energy wisely and keep my mind clear. And then also with wise speech, we speak truthfully and helpfully, but also not in a way that's harsh, divisive, or abusive. And then wise livelihood, earning your living in a way that doesn't bring harm to yourself or others. And I'd also like to share these 10 clear mind precepts from Norman Fisher's book, that are kind of similar to the more traditional precepts, but in a little bit different language. Maybe they will inspire you too. So these are, I vow to protect life, not to kill. I vow to receive gifts, not to steal. I vow to respect others and not misuse sexuality. I vow to be truthful, not to lie. I vow to remain clear, not to intoxicate myself or others. I vow to speak kindly, not to speak ill of others. I vow to practice modesty, not to praise self at the expense of others. I vow to practice generosity, not to be possessive of anything. I vow to practice loving kindness, not to harbor ill will, and I vow to cherish and polish the three treasures, which are, you know, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So what I would like to do now, is to give you a chance to, what Norman Fisher suggests that we do with these is to spend a week like on each of these 10 clear mind precepts, but we don't have quite the amount of time that we might need to do that in our month on sila. So maybe we can choose a smaller subset to focus on, aspects we're especially interested in or challenged by. So I'd like at this point to give you the opportunity to consider what aspects of Sila you might want to focus on this month. And you might choose a couple of paramis. You might choose to work just on various aspects of wise speech, or maybe on wise livelihood and think about ethical conduct in your work life. Or maybe just to really put kindness front and center, and having that intention is what works with you the best. And so I will let you go ahead, and if you want to share in the chat what you're feeling like you want to be working on this month. You don't need to, but if you feel like you would like to, you can, and I can go ahead and share some of them, and then when we're done with that, I'll share my own intentions for the month. So please feel free to share if you're ready. Or maybe no one is quite ready yet to share. Still thinking, oh, here comes some. Not to speak ill of others, right speech. That's always an important one. Yeah. Practice generosity and not to be possessive of things. Yeah. Cultivate a clear mind. Not to judge others and myself. That's a very important one. Wise speech, again, especially with young children. Really paying attention to what actions create happiness for others and for myself. More wise speech. Practicing loving kindness. Great. Well, I better stop now so I can go on and finish my talk and share mine with you. We'll have some more time to share with these in our discussion group. So thank you all for those who shared a wonderful list of beautiful qualities to work on for this month. And mine are really quite similar to the things that people have suggested. And of course, it's good to keep all the precepts in mind this month, but the three that I chose for particular attention, first was this clear mind precept of practicing loving kindness, because it seemed to me like this was such an important foundation for wanting to behave ethically, just naturally. So I'm thinking about that in my actions and also taking a little more time to really intentionally cultivate metta and develop that sense of acting ethically out of love. And the next one for me was the precept of non-harming and to protect life and not to kill. And this month I'm going to work on this by refraining from eating meat. Now, I don't eat a whole lot of meat. I'm generally pretty good about avoiding pork and beef and lamb and meats of other furry creatures, but I do eat poultry and fish, and maybe I don't really need to do that, so, or at least not so often, and so I'm going to be working on that this month. And then there's wise speech, speaking kindly and not speaking ill of others. And this is always a challenge, and I'm finding it especially challenging in our current political situation. You know, with friends and relatives, sometimes I'm not always so skillful, but there at least I have a sense of not wanting to say certain things because I don't want to hurt their feelings or make them upset. But when it comes to these different political figures, well, they're pretty far removed, and it's a lot more challenging. And it's kind of a tough one because definitely there are things happening in that realm that are harmful and that we do need to talk about and speak out about. But I also know that sometimes the way I might talk or the times when I choose to talk aren't really that helpful. And I went to lunch with my two grandnieces a while ago, and it was one of those kind of restaurants where you have to scan the QR code to get the menu. So I was doing that and on my phone, and some news thing came up about, you know, something, you know, and so I saw that and made some grouchy comment about whoever the so-and-so was that had done or said such and such. And one of my grandnieces says, "What is it about this family anyway, always talking about politics?" And I was like, huh? I was really surprised because I didn't think we talked that much about politics. And I said so. And then the other one says, "Oh, yes, you do. You guys really do." And I realized maybe that was true from their perspective, because a lot of times when I get together with my brother and my nephew, that subject does come up a lot. And it's not so much we argue, although, you know, we don't always agree, but it's more like we say stuff and get ourselves feeling all angry and worked up. Or maybe I'll say something and it will start one of them off on one of their rants about one of their pet issues that they're upset about. One of those rants that everybody in the family has already heard and really doesn't want to listen to again, you know. So maybe I could be a little wiser in speaking about this topic. Now, it's pretty early days, so I don't have a lot to say about things or how things are going so far, and I don't want to take up too much time and go over, but there are a few things I can share. First, I'm realizing that a month of practicing generosity and cultivating a sense of abundance has really been a good foundation for this month practicing Sila. It's really helped me to appreciate the joy of doing kind acts and also to see acts of Sila as gifts that I can give myself and others, so that practicing generosity really has set the stage for other kinds of ethical conduct. And I found that, you know, adding a little intentional time for metta practice has been good too. And I've found some guided meditations I can use when I don't feel inspired to just start doing the practice on my own. I can, you know, follow that. That helps. And I've also been trying some informal metta walks, like Sharon Salzberg suggests, where you just wish well to any being you encounter when you're walking. And it's kind of nice to be doing more of those things. And the refraining from eating meat has not been so difficult. I did have a day or two while I was getting rid of my leftovers of ground turkey stir fry. But aside from that, I've been doing pretty good, and it's been kind of fun because I've been looking for new recipes and trying to be more creative in my cooking. As for wise speech, well, we took my niece out for a birthday lunch on Friday, and we made it through with no angry comments or political rants. Hooray! Not just because of me, but because of the others too. I don't think they were intentionally trying not to, but they just didn't, and I didn't encourage them. My niece and her family just got a new cat, so mostly we talked about cats, and that's always a very uplifting topic, so it was really good. What's really good, though, for me, is that I'm finding, you know, thanks to the advice of our good teachers like Norman Fisher and Sylvia Borstein, but also Suze and Carrie, I'm exploring this topic of Sila with much more of a sense of interest and a sense of maybe even joyful interest than I might have thought, rather than with the anxious and sober perspective of a bad person who's trying to be good. And that's really a wonderful thing. So, thank you. Now we can sit together for a moment as I conclude with a poem by Tess Gallagher, which has to do with non-harming. It's called Choices. I go to the mountainside of the house to cut saplings and a clear view to snow on the mountain. But when I look up, saw in hand, I see a nest clutched in the uppermost branches. I don't cut that one. I don't cut the others either. Suddenly in every tree, an unseen nest where a mountain would be. Thanks, everybody, so much for being here and for your kind attention. And now we will have some time for our discussion groups, so you'll have a chance to. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Good to see you all returned here. It's kind of funny, like at the very end, this big all these faces start to appear on the screen. Just to let you know, I put the title and the author of that closing poem in case you want it in the chat. And so now that we're back together here, we have some time for you to share with the group anything you'd like to share that has come up for you in your group or in your practice this week, or any questions you might have. The floor is open, so if you would like to say something, you can raise your virtual hand, or since we haven't got so many people, you could probably even raise your physical hand too, so I can see that you would like to speak, and you can unmute yourself and go ahead. So please, anyone that would like to share, please do. Oh, Lauren, yes.
Well, I'll just share one thing that you shared, Lyndall, which was walking with metta, just that I want to practice because I want one of the things that I'm working on is just having a general feeling of my connection with all people, you know, like at the end of the loving kindness, offer loving kindness to all beings, which is hard to do, but I remembered that if I just when I'm walking down the street or in the grocery store to remember to walk with metta to people I don't even know, trying to just in an effort to see the connection. So I thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that was helpful. I've always really liked that practice. And, it helps me too, and I also like the way that, you know, it doesn't just have to be people either. You can offer it to birds or squirrels or trees or whatever. So it's a really nice way to kind of feel a sense of connection with all beings, and it's really easy too. So, yeah, I recommend the practice, and I'm glad that was a good reminder for you too, Lauren.
Thank you.
Yes, Jerry.
Yeah, something you said along the lines that you're talking about the precepts. You talked one of the precepts is not to cloud our minds with intoxicants, and you also made reference to, you know, politics, and it just one thing that, you know, I put the two together, and I think one intoxicant I have is watching the evening news. And it really clouds my mind, and it ends up resulting in not so wise speech, and things come out of my mouth too quickly sometimes because of that. So that's the thought I had this morning.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And what you say, Jerry, too, it reminds me, I didn't talk real specifically about any one of the precepts because there just wasn't that much time, but what you say really reminds me of how, you know, intoxicants can refer to alcohol and drugs, but it can also refer to other kinds of, you know, things that we consume that get us all agitated or confused. Like you're saying, you know, listening to the news, or for me, sometimes one of them is like binge watching some, you know, TV show or movie because I just want to zone out. That's kind of in the frame of intoxicants too, if it's used in a way that isn't so wise. So, you know, that's something to think about, that it could be more than alcohol and drugs. It might be other things that also clear the mind, cloud the mind, or put you into emotional states that aren't so helpful. So thanks, Jerry. That's really good. And Thomas.
Yeah, I think so. We had a interesting topic come up around cultural differences. So, you know, people living in different countries and having different norms, cultural norms about, you know, what's the right thing to do or the right perspective on things. And so we had some exploration of that and kind of connected, explore that along with Sila. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that topic.
In terms of cultural norms, well, it is kind of difficult, you know, because of the sense of wanting to respect others' cultural norms. But one thing I do recognize is that for many, many traditions, religions, there is this sort of kind of basics of conduct of non-kindness and non-harming. And exactly how it plays out, it might be different from one tradition to another, but some kind of form of non-harming, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think many of these things are really common in all traditions. So maybe a good thing is to sort of emphasize that commonality of treating others with kindness that really is a key aspect of pretty much all belief systems. You know, that maybe is a helpful thing, to see the common ground instead of the areas where we differ. I'm not quite sure what else to say about that, but that's a little bit of thoughts.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a complicated question too, though, really. It's a complicated question, especially when some practices really infringe on what we feel are the rights of other people and their treatment. So, yeah, thank you. Let's see, Maria.
So I just want to share what we share in the small group about loving and kindness. And I noticed that also during the seed. You said, first of all, we're going to notice the energy in ourselves and give ourselves the love and energy. That's the first layer you said. And the second one you said, oh, maybe after you've done that, you can give that energy to your loved ones. And then after that, you also said, oh, how about the people that irritate you, even make you feel angry? Can you give some love and caring to those people? And I didn't know, I never practiced that way during the month. I thought that was really powerful. And then it's kind of related to the love and kindness. And I realized that, like we talk about in the small group, sometimes there are days I feel great. And Julie said that too. It's like you can just give love and caring to others. Some days you just can't. And I think those are the days we just need to kind of give our love and caring to ourselves first, before we have the ability to give to others. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate the seat and the talk. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. And you're just, you know, really talking about the skillful way to practice metta, you know, that it isn't that easy for any of us. And there's some days when we can feel like we can offer kindness to all sorts of people. Some days when we can't, there are certain people that are really difficult and we're like, I can't really go there. That person is just too hard for me. And that's really normal and natural, and we shouldn't expect ourselves to be doing everything, be able to do everything at once. So just as you say, when it's too hard, we can come back to ourselves or to something that's easy, and then see if that feeling that's generated from this easy place can move out towards other places. And some places might be so difficult that it's really not wishing that individual well so much as I'm not wishing this person ill. You know, but that itself is a big thing if it's a person that's just super difficult for you. If you're at that place where I don't wish this person, I can't really love this person, but I don't wish them ill. That's something too. Yeah. So thanks. Let's see. Anybody else?
Yes. So I shared in my group that because I've worked with the precepts a long time, I have my rationalizations of how I work through them, you know. So my rationalization for eating meat or for imbibing in intoxicants or whatever. So I want to re-examine my rationalizations. And I said that it's going to take a lot longer than the time period you offered, but I think I'm going to try to work with them anew, afresh, because I think they maybe became a little stale. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's a really good intention to really look again at. Because it's so easy to kind of take the precepts sort of for granted and say, well, you know, I'm not perfect, but it's good enough. And maybe there are things that we're doing that we just don't want to recognize that aren't so skillful or aren't so helpful. Yeah. So it's good to take a fresh look. I like that too. And, you know, I'm doing it too with the meat eating thing of taking a fresh look and seeing, well, you know, do I really need to do this? And yeah, so it's good. There's so much to explore. And I think this brings out too that it's these precepts are not just like you must do this. It's more like you take the training, and it's sort of guidance. And so there's a lot of room for you to learn for yourself what this really means. And that exploration is one of the most important parts of it, to learn for yourself, yeah, this really isn't so helpful. And this actually does lead to happiness and the welfare of myself and others. Yeah, thank you. Oh, yes, Julie.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that that thing about the welfare of self and others, I have been trying to really, well, I have noticed that what is good for others makes us feel good, right? Mm-hmm. So the minute you start to feel contracted or whatever, you know, that's kind of a warning sign, like, oh, I might be thinking something and potentially saying something that's not coming from the right perspective. And I also, Linda, really appreciate the whole reminder of the loving kindness and, you know, how important that is for the practice too. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Good. Thank you so much. And I want to again thank Suze for bringing up that perspective in her talk last week, because when I heard that, I'm like, yes, yes. So it's really good. So thanks, everybody, for your comments and your sharing. And I think I'd better go ahead and do announcements so we don't run over too long.